Yeah, leave you for dead on the side of the road.
Fisting would be easier after that.
Maybe.
Stubbing at that point. But you think that'd be easier and less...
I guess. You don't have to deal with the fingers.
The knuckles is what I would think.
Yeah, I guess that's the knuckles.
The knuckles are... Like, with fisting, yeah. I would think it would be the knuckles.
I don't imagine you're going knife fist in there.
That's just handing. Fisting is...
Right,
like,
yeah, but the knuckles are at the end of the fingers, so that's kind of what I'm...
The knuckles are what would worry me, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're... You know,
that's
if you're
what keeps me from it.
Yeah, if you're getting rid of the knuckles, you're also getting rid of the fingers.
Yeah.
I'm getting rid of everything.
Right, are we going...
Yeah, I've got that fisting talk recorded.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. It's time to face the music. I'm Dave, joined by my co-host. It's time to face him, Mr. Ryan.
Not much of a musician anymore, since I lost that hand.
Our tagline for this week, it's time to face the music. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right, and we pick you, you will win a Movies on Up prize package that you will open and think, this is perfection. This is exactly what I've always wanted. The famous Movies on Up prize package. He's Ryan, I'm Dave. This week, Danny Boyle has Yesterday coming into the theaters about a dude that plays Beatles songs in a world where nobody remembers the Beatles. So that got us to thinking and then got to overthinking. We talked a lot about last week on how we got to do the Annabelle episode. This one, I thought, okay, you know, we just did The Dirt a few weeks ago. That's a music biopic. This is about a musician, but not really a biopic. So let's do our favorite non-biopic, our fake musician movie. So not Walk the Line, not Ray, not that. Is that what you were on board with for that? Not real people?
Not real musicians. There was a movie, if you'll recall, a little film called Purple Rain, starring a musician, Prince, who was not actually, he was not playing Prince. Now he's playing a guy who's essentially fucking Prince. Purple Rain is not on my list, but I felt like...
Cool as Ice is.
That would be okay. Real musicians not playing themselves is okay because it's not a biopic because it's not a biography of a real person.
Yeah, guess, and right? This is where I got really 8 Mile wasn't technically about Eminem.
No, but it's on my list.
But it was a biopic about that dude.
About that dude.
Yes. Because here's where I had an issue is I had my lists and it was great.
Right.
It's like I could put a movie that I love that I don't get to talk about, one of my favorite soundtracks ever at number one. But then I got to thinking, I know I've talked about this movie before. When would I have had an opportunity? We've never done our favorite Rachel Lee Cook movies. Or I mean, maybe we've done a Rosario Dawson episode. I know we've never done a Tara Reid episode. So then I thought, I'm going to search on the website.
And bands?
We have done a favorite fake musicians / fake bands episode. But it was from 2012.
That's old. That's in the annals.
It wasn't. Oh, I'm calling Ryan and we're canceling this. 7 years has passed. Our list could be completely different. I tried to look up my list.
I have quite a few movies that have come out since 2012.
I
have all of them except the aforementioned 8 Mile, I believe.
One of mine has since 2012. So I thought, okay, I don't want to just go.
I take that back. There's two.
I don't want to go on about That Thing You Do or Josie and the Pussycats because I'm sure they came up on that list. I couldn't find that list. My rule went, I didn't want the movie to be about the band or the band's journey. So like even something like Airheads, I left off because that's about the band trying to make it.
So something like Bill and Ted, because they are the Wild Stallions, that would work.
Yes.
Yes.
Because they're musicians, but the story is not directly about their rise to fame in the music industry.
That was my problem because I felt like the music had to be enough a part of it to where you remembered that they were actually in a band. And that's why we have the movie.
Maybe.
So our movies might be significantly different, which is okay.
They're going to be way different because I went with the music is more of a part of the plot in some of these, but then less in others. But I didn't want it to be like, I didn't want it to be about the music, like something like Frank, I love.
Yes.
But that's about the band.
Yes.
Josie and the Pussycats, I love. But that's about
Wasn't
the band.
Frank, like, that was.
I think that's why we did that episode. I love that movie.
And I wanted to put Future Folk on here, but they're an actual band.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Pop Star and stuff like that. That's about the music.
Yes.
So I didn't do that. I feel like one might be kind of loose, but I feel like it fits my rules enough. So I put more thought into the rules for this
than the actual list itself.
Than anything I've ever done in my life. So Ryan, your number five favorite non-biopic music movie.
My number five has the least to do with the music, but the very reason that the Ain't Rights are in the position that they are in, and that is why they're stuck in this green room, is because they're a band. And it is Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room from 2016, starring Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Alia Shawkat, and Patrick Stewart. Green Room feels very much like a 70s, 80s slasher movie. You get together a bunch of kids, you put them out in the middle of nowhere, add in a dash of car trouble, and then you're kind of on your way. The setup to me is a lot like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I don't think that's an accident. Saulnier manages to wedge in some plot amongst the violence and makes some really great genre flicks, not just here. And as a horror fan, it is fun to see these kids face off against skinheads and their German shepherds. But Saulnier really makes you care about the characters. When kids die in Green Room, and certainly they do, you feel it. There is a sense of loss. And in the best horror movies, none of the deaths feel like they're filler. And that's where Saulnier excels. Some of that has a lot to do with the acting. In horror movies, rarely do you get one, let alone two great performances. Green Room's got a ton. Macon Blair is really good in this. He was awesome in Blue Ruin before this as well. Poots and Shawkat are both great. Villainous Patrick Stewart is amazing.
And Joe Cole, Callum Turner.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many good.
Yelchin is intense, maybe a bit of a one-speed character. But given the way that the Green Room scene starts for him, you can kind of understand why. We do get to see the Ain't Rights play, so we understand why they're not super popular amongst this skinhead group. So for me, it filled enough of, oh yeah, these kids are in a band. This is why they're in this situation. But the entire movie is not about them playing music, so it's the most Dave movie on my list.
And it's such a Dave movie, it was my number two. I had thought, like, oh, I'll just swap it out with one of my also-rans. No, because I want to talk about it more, so I'll make it my number five. Anton Yelchin is one of my favorite actors. He's one that still bums me out that he passed away, and especially how he did. And this is such an Anton Yelchin role. He's so good in this movie. Poots is really, really good. Mark Webber shows up and rules. Macon Blair. Nobody's asked to do a ton, but everybody's given just enough to be really, really good. Nobody's just there.
And given you enough to know, like, oh, that's who
yes.
this person is.
Nobody's just there right. to be a body count or to be a punch guy. Or everybody has its purpose, and everybody has enough room to display that purpose. And Poots and Yelchin together, one of the most beautiful things is the end of this movie, them sitting there. He's like, oh, I have an answer to that question. Who gives a fuck? Like, it's just like, none of this matters. I love it. And I almost left this off because I feel like the band is way more important to this movie than the rest of my list.
Holy shit.
But I love this movie so much that I had to put it on there.
Not a lot of crossover going to be here.
No, we're not going to be much crossover at all. I promise you that. There's some that I wanted to sneak on that I could have done, but I love this movie so much. So I'll bump it from 2 to 5 to keep it going.
My number four is one of a couple movies that actually features a musician playing another musician. We have mentioned one of these movies already. This is not that one. This is a more contemporary movie. It is Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper in A Star Is Born from 2018. Jackson Maine and Ally, played by the aforementioned Cooper and Lady Gaga. Sam Elliott in there as well, Oscar nominated. Sam Elliott. This one, I think, is a bit more on the nose. When I started thinking about musicians that were not biopics, this one came into my mind 3 times. And to be honest, I actually thought the music in this movie was great. In a movie about 2 megastars in the music world, if they don't have songs that could be hits on the Billboard charts, it kind of takes you out of it. Shallow, absolutely, is a song that, had it not come from a movie, you could totally buy that. That's just a hell of a duet that these people are going to go tour with. It kind of gives the movie, not that it necessarily needed it, but this sense of legitimacy, which, like I said, is crazy for a movie that nearly won Best Picture. There's plenty to like about the movie. I think Cooper does a good enough job directing and starring, basically directs a music video and gives a good performance as well. And I give him a ton of credit for learning the craft as much as he did. There were people last year that gave good performances, went out and did some lip syncing and managed to win a trophy. He didn't do that. So in addition to directing the thing, he actually put in the time to be an actual musician such as it was. Sam Elliott's great in his limited screen time. My main complaint about the movie is actually Gaga. Not that she did a bad job, but I think in the scenes where she really has some emoting to do, it kind of seems like Cooper took that away. The scene of her in the hallway surrounded by his posters could have and should have been even more powerful than it was. We stay with her for quite a while there, but as soon as it seems like the emotion is coming, that's when we finally cut away. Maybe it's because she didn't quite sell it. I don't know. It just seemed to me that for someone to be nominated for Best Lead Actress, the director shouldn't need to protect them. And maybe that's just me assigning that to this movie. I think she's a fine actress. This is not the first time she was nominated for an award for acting. I'm not going to take that away from her. But I think in this movie, her best performances, the most emotion she put into her scenes was while she is performing. And I think that's something that a lot of singers could have pulled off. Not to cheapen it for her. She was fine, but I think she was actually the weakest part of the movie, which was a good movie.
I've only heard Shallow. That's the only song I've heard off of this. It's a solid song. You liken it to that thing you do where if that song is not as good as it is, that whole movie falls flat. And that's why Entourage never really worked for me, because I can't picture a world where Adrian Grenier is a competent actor, let alone this big-time movie star. That can take me out of it. There has to be some legitimacy there. That's the whole reason I could never watch Entourage, just because I can't see him as a good actor, let alone a big megastar. Take that, Entourage. My number four, it was my number five, got promoted from 1991. Stars a couple of guys who are in a band who are going to write the song to save the world and lead to world peace. It is from 1991, directed by Peter Hewitt, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. We mentioned them already, the Wild Stallions. They're musicians, kind of. They haven't really grown into their own yet in this. And the music is kind of the driving force of this, because that's their purpose in life, is to write this song, make this music that changes everything. And they're just not there yet. I try to sneak these movies on anytime I can, so any opportunity I can get to talk about Excellent Adventure or Bogus Journey, I'm into it. I think I squeezed them both on my Keanu list, probably. So I couldn't not bring it up here, because it fits all the criteria of, yeah, they're musicians, but it's the movie's not about the music. I mean, it's about robots and evil versions and hell and heaven and aliens. And
it's kind of a part of the setup.
Yeah, but I couldn't not have Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey on my musicians list. So that's my number four.
My number three is the other movie.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Yes, featuring an actor playing a musician. This time it's not that Ali was that far removed from Lady Gaga. They were both pop stars. This is Eminem as B-Rabbit from Curtis Hanson's 8 Mile, 2002, starring Kim Basinger and Brittany Murphy. I did have a difficult time with this one because, like we mentioned, B-Rabbit and Eminem aren't technically the same person, but a white rapper from Detroit is playing a wannabe white rapper from Detroit. I think it's fairly easy to draw some parallels there. Seemed pretty autobiographical with some extra drama infused to round out the movie, but if you really think about it, isn't that what any biopic is? It's most of the story embellished so that people will want to watch it in movie form. What's really weird about this one is that we have the subject basically playing a biopic of himself, outside of maybe the aforementioned Purple Rain, where we have biopics where, you know, a lot of times it's because the musician's dead, so they can't really play themselves. But this is such a weird thing, and maybe that's a good topic for a list in the future. God, not right now, because I don't want to think about it, but it is just fascinating that essentially Eminem gets to play himself, Eminem as Eminem, in the Eminem story, which is something that's just kind of weird.
Get rich or die trying.
Yeah, cool as ice. You got some rappers doing that. They have the balls to pull that sort of thing off. So I don't really know what kind of movie that makes this. Is it a biopic? Is it just a drama? Documentary? I don't know. But it is really good. It's got a hell of a cast. In 2002, there are a few musical acts more popular than Marshall Mathers. Brittany Murphy kind of at her peak. But when you look back on it now, Michael Shannon is the abusive boyfriend of Jimmy's mom. Couldn't have been any better cast. And Anthony Mackie is the big bad of the rival Rat Crew, Papa Doc. Both incredible. And it's really easy to see the intensity that Shannon is known for 17 years later, and that Anthony Mackie is now kind of a big star because he's got charisma to burn in this movie. It's just funny to go back and watch it now that these guys have sort of ascended, and you know, Kim Basinger, Eminem are kind of on the way down.
I legit did not know Anthony Mackie was in it. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I didn't know Anthony Mackie was in it.
He's like, he's the final guy that he has the rap duel with. So, I mean, if you want to see like what Anthony Mackie would be like as a rap singer, here you go.
They're called rappers.
Rapper?
This is one of those, it's like, oh, what are 8 Mile like movies? One that I left off the list that I really, really like was a couple years ago, Baby Cakes, starring Danielle McDonald, which is really good, but it's about the journey. It's about her trying to break out in the rap scene with a fantastic soundtrack. I absolutely love the soundtrack to Baby Cakes. My number three now is where the music is the most relevant and probably the most present in all of mine. Between this and Green Room, they were the ones where it was, you never forget that they're musicians. It's also one of the greatest soundtracks ever made, starring a
Spawn.
starring a real life musician playing a fictionalized version of herself from 1992, written by Lawrence Kasdan, directed by Mick Jackson, starring Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston. It is The Bodyguard. This movie bangs. Like, this movie still rules. 13-year-old me saw this movie so many times in the theater.
And you knew you'd always love it.
I knew I would always love it. I knew I'd always love the soundtrack. Because you know what? That song gets a lot of run because it's one of the greatest songs ever made.
Yes, it does.
But the entire soundtrack is fucking great. The entire soundtrack is Whitney Houston at her peak making amazing pop songs, and it goes back to Shallow being a good song, That Thing You Do being a good song. You buy her as the world's biggest pop star because she's goddamn Whitney Houston.
Right, because she was.
She's Whitney Houston, and the songs are great. Yes, I could see the world getting behind this. Even now, you watch it now. I love this era Kevin Costner. I'm an early to late 90s, No Way Out, that kind of Kevin Costner up until The Postman. Or Waterworld. In between there is my Kevin
Pre-Postman.
Yes, my Kevin Costner sweet spot. He's so good in this movie. She's really good. Because even when she's not being this massive pop star, she's just so good. I love this movie. It's from 27 years old. It still bangs. You can still watch it. Never remake this movie because you can't make it better. I love this movie. It's so good. Because, you know, I talk about Heat a lot.
Mm-hmm. And perfect movie.
Yes. You watch Heat and it's like, oh, it's kind of dated. Doesn't hold up as well. Bodyguard, it holds up. It's a fantastic movie. Because the songs, they were bangers then. They're bangers now. Like, I love this. It's such a good movie. One of the greatest soundtracks of all time. Rachel Maron, a great, great musical character.
My number two is a movie that The Bodyguard was big back in the day. I think it's fair to say it's waned in its popularity. I think it was just out of sight, out of mind.
It shouldn't. I'm not bringing it back.
Not arguing against that. But my number two is a movie that kind of did the exact opposite. When it came out in 2000, nobody gave a shit about Almost Famous. It was almost a gigantic bomb. Directed and written by Cameron Crowe, starring Billy Crudup, Frances McDormand, Kate Hudson, and Patrick Fugit. The band Stillwater. Speaking of autobiographical, Patrick Fugit plays a young Cameron Crowe, spending his youth covering the biggest bands in the world for Rolling Stone. And Stillwater, made up of Crudup and Jason Lee, are kind of a stand-in for all those bands, whether it's the Allman Brothers.
Just all merged together.
Yeah, just taking random stories from all those bands and just attributing them all to this fictional band. And while most of my other movies have at least one standout song, For a movie that's about following a band, this one is less about the music. Almost Famous really works when it's about the relationships within the group and their mega groupie Penny. The relationships with how Fugit's character ingratiates himself, becomes a part of that circle, can't really look at it objectively anymore when that's his job, and how that's going to set up for the rest of his career. A couple of weeks ago, we bitched because The Dirt never really showed Motley Crue as a band, and they actually were. Almost Famous takes a fake band in Stillwater and makes them seem like they're the real band, and Motley Crue is the one that they just made up for this movie. The characters were all amalgamations of a lot of people and a lot of stories, but through Crow's writing, you'd swear they were real. And it's a damn good movie.
And the performances are so good. Mm-hmm. Kate Hudson in this movie,
she's amazing.
Is so good. And I think a large...
The scene where she gets gambled away is amazing.
Like Jason Lee, yep, and Crudup. Just everybody's so good in this movie. And I think a big thing, something that I look at for actors is when they get this next, like this big young thing. And I mean, a lot of times you have this big young thing that falls flat on their face.
Right.
But then sometimes you have them where they're really, really good in this movie and then don't really become it after that. And I look at Patrick Fugit like that. Like, he's had a good career, but seeing him in this movie thinks like, that's going to be a big star. He never gave a performance like this, like Haley Joel Osment in The Sixth Sense. They notched out nice careers, but they were never as good as they were in that moment. This movie was good. My number two, we'll just keep going with hyperbole. Bodyguard, I think, had one of the best soundtracks of all time. My number two is quite possibly, and this is more hyperbolic, quite possibly the funniest movie ever made for probably the widest audience. It might be the most widely accepted funniest movie of all time, about an American rock and roll singer who, while touring Europe, ends up somehow involved in a plot to rescue a scientist that's trapped in East Germany in 1984, top secret, from Jim Abrams and David Zucker. Val Kilmer doesn't play a spy in this movie. He plays a rock star, like a Ricky Avalon or something, and who just ends up, he has to go rescue this scientist from Germany. I mean, five-year-old me loved this movie. There's so many things that made five-year-old Dave laugh that make 39-year-old Dave laugh hysterically in this movie. Val Kilmer crawling to the boots and then looking up and they're just a pair of boots. Like, that will always make me laugh. It's such a dumb gag. You know, this is after Airplane. This is before The Naked Gun. Those are like the, I think, the pedestals of absurdist parody humor. But I think Top Secret is better than both of them. It doesn't have the iconic lines as the Airplane does. But I think from start to finish, it is the funnier movie. It's so good. Because it's Val Kilmer, like, you don't, especially now, you don't expect to see him. Like, yeah, he had real genius around the time and all that stuff. But, like, you never think back to Val Kilmer as being this, like, great comedy star. But yet, here he carries what I believe would be one of the funniest movies of all time if people saw it again. Honestly, like, I just feel like it's not as seen as Airplane or The Naked Gun. I feel like if you take people now from wide varieties of taste and age and everything and show them all three, I feel like this would be the one that is the funnier of the three.
It might hold up the best. Airplane for me is always going to be, of those three, the one that I'm always going to have the highest up there. But
I'm not shit. I love the Naked Gun.
Yeah,
movies.
That's kind of the thing. Like, Naked Gun and Airplane, I do think have sort of lasted more in the public conscious than this one has. And I'm not sure if that's a reflection of, at the time, people liked those better, they appreciated them more, and that's why we have carried them on with us. But to be honest, I do see very little difference between Top Secret and, like, The Naked Gun and Hot Shots later. Like, it's probably better written than Hot Shots. But my number one is the only soundtrack on this list that I have purchased.
Spawn.
Yeah, I was like the one white suburban kid who didn't have the 8 Mile soundtrack, but I do have the soundtrack for John Carney's Sing Street from 2016, starring Ferdia Walsh-Pilo, Lucy Boynton, Jack Rayner, and Littlefinger, Aidan Gillen. this movie was one that I had no idea what I was really going to get when I watched it. I had read that it was on a couple people's end of the year list from 2016. And I thought, all right, well, you know, I respect these people, so I'll give it a watch. And watching this kid, Walsh Pilos, Cosma, start this band seemingly just to impress Rafina, the girl across from his school, with that band, I feel like that's why a lot of guys, like that's why the Motley Crue guys started Motley Crue, to get chicks. As an entry point of why you would start a band, that made a lot of sense. But watching the evolution of what that music would become for him was a really good trip to go on. You know, he starts the band for love or for adulation, whatever it is. Then it becomes like sort of a way for him to express rebellion against the situation that he's in. And then ideally to have a better life than what he sees at home and in his neighborhood. We get to see all that through the eyes and minds of some really naive Irish kids. Sing Street's got some really fun and poppy music sequences, but it doesn't shy away from the character stuff, whether that's Rafina's backstory or Jack Rayner's character coming to terms with being the burnout and the jealous older brother. It's really, really fun at times watching these kids put together the first music video where they're all dressed as they're from different bands and hearing them kind of make fun of each other. It's a lot of fun. Like, that plays like a comedy. And then sort of by the end of it, when they're making up their minds, like, as kids, this is what we want to pursue for the rest of our lives. It's a fun ride to go on. And there's actually some weight to it. It's not just these kids form a band in their high school to try and impress girls, and then they end up playing at the school dance and, you know, they get the girls, end of movie. There is a lot more to it than that. And the soundtrack is dope. There's some really good songs on it.
I like Jack Rayner, apparently.
We're bringing you around on that, slowly but surely.
I had no reason to dislike him, and I watched him in one movie, and I liked him. My number one, it's one of those I'll bring up any chance I get. I know I've talked about it, probably in the Sammy Jackson episode, and another one that was one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. It is from 1992. Another one starring a musician. But in this one, he's not playing a musician. Starring Tupac, Ernest R. Dickerson's Juice from 1992. Starring Tupac Shakur as Bishop, Jermaine Hopkins, Khalil Khan, Sammy Jackson, Queen Latifah, another musician. But playing the musician in this movie is Omar Epps. Before he was coaching the Steelers, plays DJ Q. It's about this kid who has these dreams of being a DJ, but then the streets and his friends are calling him other places. And is this something he can do and actually make a life out of? Or is it something to use as an alibi to rob a grocery store? So the contrast there. And I like that it's Tupac in this is not the musician. Like, he easily could have been replaced DJing with rapping. And Tupac is the rapper kid. And Tupac is so damn good in this movie. This is him breaking onto the scene as an actor and just being an incredible villain. He's got this likability that, like, yeah, you understand why Q and Steel and Raheem, why they really, really like him, why these four guys are ride or dies. But then he takes that turn and it's like, good Lord, like, I don't want to be on Tupac's bad side. So yeah, maybe the DJing isn't as prominent here, but it's a big part of the plot because it is Q trying to not fall in that rabbit hole of this is the life that we're from the streets, this is all we can do. You can get juice and you can get clout by not robbing stuff and not being a menace. You can earn it another way and go somewhere else. And Omar Epps is one of those where I don't think people really look back and think like, oh, he was a really good... In the 90s, Omar Epps had some, like, powerhouse performances. Juice is one of them. Because Tupac was so good, he had to be good to go against him. And another one, this soundtrack, yeah, it's not by the characters. You know, it's not DJ Q did the soundtrack. But you go back to 1992 and think of the biggest rappers and artists in R&B and hip-hop. You have Naughty by Nature, Eric B. and Rakim, Teddy Riley, Big Daddy Kane, Too Short, EPMD, Salt-N-Pepa, Cyrus Hill, Raheem, Brand New Heavies, all on one soundtrack. The soundtrack is great. The music was great. The music drove the movie. along with the performances and, you know, DJ Q, one of the best screen DJs out there.
Omar Epps, 93. Yeah, Juice in 92. 93 was The Program. 94, he was Willie Mays Hayes in Major League 2. 95, Higher Learning. That's a good run.
That's like Higher Learning is the one that comes. He's a powerhouse in that movie. That and Juice. He's
Really
good.
I mean, not a powerhouse as the center fielder for the Cleveland
Wesley
Indians.
Snipes,
but. Yeah, but The Program, ton of good performances there. He certainly did have a run. We did in 2015 our favorite movies starring rappers.
This would have been my number one.
Yeah. It was not.
Oh, was House Party?
House Party was your number one. I was like, do you want to rephrase that?
I know House Party 2 was also on the list.
I believe it was, as well as the Fat Boys movie.
No, I didn't put Fat Boys on.
You did not?
No, I didn't.
Fair enough. I thought I could recreate it all.
How high would have been on there, though? Just guessing. I
can almost guarantee that 8 Mile was on mine.
I would guess the two House Party movies, Juice, How High, Trespass with Ice Cube, probably. Or That Day in the Life, the Sticky Fingers rap musical.
I think those all got some run. Surviving the Game, probably in there as well.
That might have been there,
yeah. There's some good ones. But if you want to listen to us speculate on what our list may have been, we can do
that. That is one of my, to this day.
Or if you just want to go back, it was August of 2015.
That's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. Because I got to mention both House Parties and Juice. And How High. Yeah. I got to talk about the smoking the dead president. Oh, yeah. What kind of also rants did you have?
Two that we've already mentioned, Purple Rain, Bill and Ted, that was, I had a feeling would be on your list somehow. The Wedding Singer was one that I like a lot, kind of circled the list. This is Spinal Tap, but we mentioned that an awful lot. Pitch Perfect, I think, is really funny. The first one, they are a band, and I do fucking love some pop star. I love the Style Boys. I'm big Connor for real guy. Just watched that movie a couple weeks ago. Of all of them, that might be the biggest injustice. But we're only going to kick off Green Room.
Yeah, and see, that's, I have it in two because I have the list that I started making, which is Josie and the Pussycats, Airheads, Frank, That Thing You Do, Almost Famous, Pop Star, Baby Cakes. Those were the ones where I was doing music movies. The ones that got left off, I had The Wedding Singer. That was the one that if I was going to replace Green Room after you, it was going to make it on there. Sister Act, if you go back to that first one, that's a really good movie. The Perfection went up on Netflix. That's a music movie. I didn't like it as much as I wanted to. Coyote Ugly, which I'm pretty sure I got to sneak in there when we talked about fake musicians. And then one that kind of teeters the line between both being about the music and it's just a movie where one of the characters happens to be a musician was Get Him to the Greek.
Yeah,
that's like right down the center because it's the whole point is getting him to his concert, but it's not really about him being, it's about Aldous Snow being Aldous Snow and not the musician. So
Walk Hard I enjoy too.
Walk Hard was one of those when I put non-biopic, like I thought that I thought like
it's
hope,
a mock you biopic.
Yeah, like I was hoping we'd leave that off because I know we've talked about, I think when we did our favorite
fake musicians,
I think that was up there for both of us. Like one's really good. Like there's a
probably
ton,
an also ran for both of us.
Yeah, there's a ton of good ones. Next week though, speaking of a ton of good ones, this is a hell of a year so far for movies. Usually at the halftime, sometimes at the halftime show, it's like, oh, there's two movies I liked, and then I got to fill out a top five. This one is going to be interesting because I could probably do a top 10 of movies I've really liked this year that's really top heavy with movies that I absolutely love. So it's our halftime show the next week. It's one of my favorite episodes we do each year. It's just our favorite five movies so far this year. I'm excited for that. That's like the halfway point of the year. We're midway through summer, so
be a mad dash to watch some more movies to see if I can bump off some that are on
without there the without the month off that we get in December before doing our favorites of the year.
We need
so
to figure out a way around that.
Yeah,
figure out this time travel thing will be fun.
Yeah, so it'll be fun. Next week's our halftime show, and then we got some fun episodes coming up after that. But until then,
keep it up.